You can help support the Daily Tech News Show by becoming a patron. Go to patreon.com/agedetect or bit.ly/help DTNS.
This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, August 27, 2014. I'm Tom Merritt, and joining me today, Mr. Dan Patterson, technology journalist extraordinaire at danpatterson.com. Welcome back to the show, Dan.
Great to be here, Tom.
Good to have you alongside as well. We're going to be talking about Uber and Lyft, and I was reading a good article about this from Mr. Tim Lee of Vox Media, a tech reporter there, and Tim is going to join us as well. Thanks for joining us, Tim.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's great. First, let's get to the headlines. Recode reports Apple plans to unveil a wearable device along with two iPhones at a yet-to-be-officially-announced September 9th event. The wearable will supposedly make use of HomeKit and HealthKit, as one might expect. A rumored October event was rumored to announce a wearable, but is still rumored to be on, according to Recode.
Dropbox increased my storage to 1 terabyte today, and they did. I got the email. As CNET reports, Dropbox Pro users now have one tier that doubles the previous top tier of 500 gigabytes and costs $10 per month. The previous price of the lowest tier, which was 100 gigabytes, Dropbox is also rolling out the ability to password protect shared links, share in edit or view mode only, as well as add expiration dates to links. Finally, users can remotely wipe folders on lost or stolen devices.
Feeling that BitTorrent sync pressure. Hey, Dropbox. You know what? They lowered my price and increased my storage today. I'm pretty happy with them, I'll be honest. The Verge reports that Microsoft will begin selling the Kinect sensor as a standalone product as of October 7th. The Kinect will sell for $149 and come with a copy of Dance Central Spotlight. So it's kind of a bundle. Back in May, Microsoft began selling the Xbox One without the Kinect for a reduced price of $399, and Kinect for Windows is still expected later this year.
The Next Web reports that Google will launch its first campus in Asia with a startup-focused location in Seoul. Google's startup program currently has locations in London and Tel Aviv as well. Google hopes to launch the campus sometime next year.
The Next Web reports Twitter has opened up its tweet activity dashboard to English, French, Japanese, and Spanish users who've had an account for at least 14 days. Everybody else should get it soon as well, though. This is the dashboard previously only available to advertisers. So, stats nerds, head to analytics.twitter.com if you have a few hours to get lost. It's pretty good stuff in there.
The Germany's Federal Institute for Occupational Safety and Health is exploring the idea of passing a law to ban after-hours work and emails and calls. This sounds amazing. German firms such as BMW, Volkswagen, and Deutsche Telekom have banned after-hours work communication on their own already. The labor minister of North Rhine, word I can't pronounce.
Westphalia.
There you go. Germany's most populous state called for such a law earlier this month to combat burnout.
Yeah. I don't think my wife would be able to work if that were the law. She seems to do all of her work. Like, it's meetings all day and then answering emails all night.
New York City would shut down.
Time for some news from you. These are stories submitted at our subreddit, dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Captain Kipper submitted this one. It's a GeekWire story on Google's domain registration service, which is currently invite only. Google offers free Whois privacy protection and up to 100 free email forwarding addresses for $12. Domains can be configured as usual, though there is built-in integration with Wix, Shopify, and Squarespace. Downside is Google doesn't support all domain names, like .tv, for instance, at least not yet.
User David Polanco, I got your name right there, pointed out that Seagate is now shipping an 8-terabyte, 3.5-inch hard drive with SATA 6 gigabit per second interface. Select customers are getting the drives now with wider available next quarter.
8 terabytes. The digital hoarder inside me is very excited about that. Captain Kipper passes along the consumerist report that Hewlett-Packard is recalling nearly 6 million power cords because they can overheat, creating a fire and burn hazard. HP's received 29 reports of melting cords, and considering how many they're recalling. It's not that many, but it's enough. Two actually had claims of minor burns associated with them. The LS15 AC cords were distributed with both HP and Compaq notebook and mini notebook computers, and with some accessories like docking stations as well. Cords were sold in the U.S. and Canada from September September 2010 to June 2012 at electronic stores and at HP.com. So we'll have a link to instructions on what to do in the show notes at DailyTechNewsShow.com. But instruction number one is if you think you have one of these cords, unplug it because no burning.
MacBytes sent in the Engadget story that researchers at Harbin Institute of Technology's Complex Flow and Heat Lab have developed a way that could allow submarines to travel from Shanghai to San Francisco. That's 9,873 kilometers in as few as 100 minutes using a sort of air bubble that could take advantage of super captivation and reduces drag. Vehicles could reach the speed of sound underwater. That's about 5,800 kilometers per hour. They just need to crack launching, steering, and powering it. And boom, super fast submarines.
That's all. Just the steering and the rocket that powers it and stuff. No, this is good research stuff.
Yeah, right. Fascinating.
Yeah, good stuff. And that is a look at the headlines. Hey, folks, don't forget, if you like tech history, I have some Kindle singles that Scott Johnson and I have been working on. We have 11 of the 12 months covered now. The September book, it just came out. So if you want to get a look at tech history and get some illustrations from Scott Johnson, they're 99 cents for each month. You get three or four things a day in there. Check them out at Amazon or go to TomMerrittBooks.com. All right, so we really haven't been covering this phase of the Uber-Lyft fight. On Daily Tech News Show a while ago, we talked about the fact that was on August 12th, CNN reported Uber employees around the company had ordered and canceled 5,560 Lyft rides. Then Uber responded and said Lyft's drivers and employees are doing the same thing. They've canceled 12,900. So when I saw the story from Casey Newton yesterday on The Verge about Uber's internal plan to recruit Lyft drivers, I figured, well, Lyft probably got the same sort of thing. If you want to know, what Uber does is they contract with a company called Target CW in San Diego to have recruiters. They call them brand ambassadors. They mostly work at events trying to get riders to ride Uber, but they also are charged with recruiting Lyft drivers, and they get a $750 bounty per recruited driver commission. Now, the canceled thing, the idea that these people are getting into rides just to steal Lyft drivers away and make them Uber drivers, has caused a big backlash on the internet. In fact, I asked earlier on Twitter, does this anger you? And most of the people said, yeah. A lot of people said, I will never drive Uber again. This is dirty tactics. But Tim, you wrote a good article up on Vox saying this seems like it might just be good for Lyft. In other words, Lyft's trying to tar Uber and win some sympathy over to their side.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, if you look at any industry, you look at the fast food industry, like McDonald's is trying to hire Burger King's workers and vice versa. Like, that's just how labor markets work. And the problem is that if you are Uber, like, there's no Lyft store you can go to find their workers and try to recruit them. And so if you want to do the same thing everybody else does, every other company does, to recruit your competitors' workers, you have to do something like this, where you hail them and then get in their car and try to recruit them. And so it seems like that's just what Uber's been doing, is that they've been trying to get in touch with these workers. And the thing that's gotten everybody upset is that figure of 5,500 cancellations. But the thing you have to realize about that is that Lyft has 60,000 riders or drivers. And so only 1 in 10 of their drivers has ever gotten a cancellation like this. I mean, it sounds like the reason this happens is that if you have a recruiter who's already made the pitch to a driver once, and they sign up for a ride and see it's somebody they've already talked to, it would be a waste of everybody's time to go through that exercise again. So they cancel again, and, you know, that's kind of annoying, and maybe they shouldn't do that. But it's not some kind of concerted sabotage campaign. It's just they're trying to, you know, not waste the time of having a conversation they've already had.
And I think the idea of going and recruiting the drivers strikes some people as playing dirty pool. Trying to steal away people from your competitor is nasty, even without the canceled rides, even if you set that aside. But as you mentioned, if I work for McDonald's and I go into Burger King and I order a burger, and during the ordering process, I'm like, hey, you know, we're paying $5 more an hour across the street. You might want to come over. Is that unfair?
Yeah, no, and to the contrary, I mean, we've had this in the tech industry. There were some, allegations that seem to be true that some of the big tech companies have had a deal not to do this, and it's illegal. Like, companies are not allowed to say we're not going to hire each other's workers because that's unethical. It's good for workers when employers compete for each other's workers.
And go ahead.
What it would appear to be, and I've done no reporting on this, and I'm kind of curious, Tim, what you know, what you found. But what Uber hired a third party to do something that most people would hire a third party to do, which is to separate you from the practice that you're doing. If you're doing recruiting or any type of research, you'll often hire a third party to conduct that for you so that you can get unbiased results or for any number of reasons to distance yourself from liability. And that in that process, this has then been spun against them and is used not in the probably benign way it was intended, but has been spun into something that it appears and has the whiff of dirty tactics. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that might be hard. I mean, certainly, like, hiring a third party to help you find workers is very common. You know, at the higher end, you got headhunters who recruit new executives. Like, there's nothing inherently unethical about that. I think part of the problem here is that Uber has a reputation as being a very aggressive company in general, and one that people don't necessarily, they think they not necessarily the most scrupulous company. And so even though this particular tactic is not particularly over the line, people are just, I think, predisposed to think the worst of them because there probably are things in the past that they're upset about. But this particular tactic, it just doesn't seem that unusual to me.
Yeah, the Lyft drivers actually can still continue to drive for Lyft and drive for Uber if they so choose. I don't think a lot of people realize that. They're independent contractors themselves. So if I were a Lyft driver, what I'd be trying to do is sign up to become a brand ambassador for Uber, convince myself to go drive for them and collect the $750 bonus.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've seen, you've seen for the last few months a number of programs. I think Lyft stopped collecting their commission for a while, and Uber had some programs like this too, where, and this probably isn't going to last forever, but in the meantime, like, drivers are really benefiting from the fact that both companies are kind of racking their brains for ways to get better drivers. It's annoying and stressful, and but markets are like that sometimes. You still would rather have two companies trying to hire you rather than just one company that basically gets to dictate terms.
Dan, do you think that there is something, because I think Tim brought up a good point, that Travis Kalanick, who's the CEO of Uber, doesn't go around trying to make friends. He's hard driving. He's competitive. He's one of those kinds of CEOs. Do you think a lot of this is just personal reaction?
Well, I think a lot of this is probably a reaction to the brand, which has a bad whiff to it. I think a lot of this, I would be very curious as to what Lyft's complicity in pushing the story or propagating the story is. But I think that what we're seeing is two very competitive companies in a very competitive marketplace, and they use tactics like this. To the public, Tom, when we first started talking about this earlier this afternoon, it reminded me a lot of what the music business used to do in the late 90s. Back when Jesus was a sophomore, some of my earliest jobs were as street teaming for the music business. And they will often hire people or cash it out and give you cash and say, we're distancing ourselves from whatever tactics get these records into people's hands and get the competitors' records off the street. And this seems like something that is business as usual, but it's to the public, it probably looks and feels pretty bad.
I was expecting that we would hear, and maybe we still will, that Lyft has a similar type of recruitment program. Probably if Uber could get their hands on such details, they would be throwing them out there as fast as they could. But either way, whether it's Lyft or Uber, Tim, where do you think it would be too far for them to go? Like, where is the line where somebody should say, like, you know what, these are dirty tactics. It's unethical. I don't like this sort of thing.
Well, so I certainly think if, in fact, they're deliberately canceling people's, scheduling rides and then deliberately canceling them as a sabotage technique, that would be problematic. And, if it was, 55,000 or 500,000 cancellations rather than 5,000, like, there'd be a stronger case there. So that's one element. But I mean, generally speaking, like, when you're talking about recruiting workers, like, I think fundamentally, like, the workers are not the property of Lyft. They're independent contractors. They're adults, and anything I think you can do that's to make sure people understand they have this alternative and offering them a better deal, I think is generally fair game.
And the taxi companies have got to be ecstatic right now that Uber is getting this kind of backlash against them, because they're the ones who've been suffering at the hands of Uber's tactics up until now, at least in public opinion.
Oh, yeah. And I actually think this is another example of why things that may look a little bit shady are not necessarily bad for the public. I mean, you know, a lot of the things that Uber did early on where they just went into these markets, is not clear that everything they did was legal, but I think a lot of people would say it kind of applied some pressure to the regulatory system. It, you know, helped to kind of break this kind of logjam where you have these taxi monopolies. And I'm not sure you'd want like this kind of warm and fuzzy, you know, company that wasn't trying to offend anybody, because they just would have gotten squashed by these taxi companies. And so sometimes like having this kind of hard-charging personality running a company like this can actually, I think, have some benefits for workers and for consumers.
Yeah, it's a really good point that it is quite likely that some of the things they did, like drivers without insurance or undercutting the system for legally operating in certain cities, is much more questionable. Whether it's illegal is a different question, but it's certainly much more questionable than what they're doing here, which seemed to me as I was reading Casey Newton's story, and I thought Casey Newton did a great job with this story. I'd be like, this is what companies do for recruiting, you know, especially if they're very aggressive. And I will admit this is a very aggressive plan, but I don't think Uber or Lyft, either one, want to be my friend. They both they both just want me to spend my money with them.
I think one of the brilliant things about the way Lyft handled this is they put the cancellation story out. I guess we first heard about it in January, and they had another kind of wave of it earlier this month. So that was sort of the frame people had thinking of, and it was framed as just straight up sabotage. And so even though I think in some ways Casey's story, it provided a more plausible explanation for why this might not have been sinister, people were already primed to see the cancellation thing as a sinister thing, and they saw the whole thing as sinister. Yeah. And I don't know if that was a deliberate kind of play on Lyft's part, or it just happened to be that was the part of the story that came up first, but I think that really worked to their advantage.
Well, Tim, really appreciate you taking the time. Dan, anything else to add before we move off the story?
No, I think it's a good meta story, though. It's fun to follow the coverage of this story because it is evolving, and this is a great this just unveils some of the more sneaky tactics that happen every day in technology.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is interesting to set it down, as Tim mentioned earlier, next to the anti-poaching story, which is still going through court, by the way, where we are very upset at tech companies agreeing not to hire each other's employees. So, if you want to check out Tim's story, go to Vox.com. We'll have a link in the show notes at DailyTechNewsShow.com as well. Really appreciate you being on. We'd love to have you back sometime, Tim.
All right. Thanks, guys. It was fun.
All right. Take care. Moving on to the calendar, August 29th through September 1st is Dragon Con. As I mentioned, I will be there. In fact, we'll be doing the Daily Tech News Show at a later time, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Friday from Dragon Con with, for sure, Jonathan Strickland and probably more guests as well. And tomorrow's show will be from the road, so it'll be sort of a headlines-only show, maybe some commentary recorded on a plane, maybe not. We'll see. Also on this date, August 27th in 1962, NASA launched the Mariner 2 unmanned space mission to Venus. Go get them, Mariner. Our pick of the day comes from Scott Odell. It's called Slice.com. He said, after hearing a while back about Luke Poor's pick, Package Buddy, I wanted to add my pick for tracking purchases, Slice.com. Slice builds on Package Buddy by automating tracking and putting all your purchase and tracking info into one app. It scrapes your email to give you a purchase history and can give you notifications for items, shipping, out for delivery, and delivered. Since it also helps you track all your online purchasing habits, once I signed it up, it gave me my entire online purchasing history since I first began ordering online 8 years worth. So check it out. I haven't tried it, but Scott seems to like it. Slice.com. I have heard of it. Dan, do you do anything like this, tracking your purchases and packages and stuff?
I do with smaller things, and I've used Mint in the past, but this sounds – I mean, if this can look at historical records and then analyze how I spend stuff, it has a ton of value going forward, and it sounds like something you can jump into and have a ton of data extracted pretty quickly.
I got emails going back to 1999 in certain places. I wonder if it would do with that. Send your picks to feedback at DailyTechNewsShow.com, and you can find my picks at DailyTechNewsShow.com/picks. Got a couple messages of the day before we finish up here. Joe Fox wrote in and said, hi, Tom and Jenny. By the way, it warms my heart that you guys include Jenny in the emails, because on the audio podcast, you never hear her. She is there on the post show on the video, but she is essential in making this show. So I'm glad you're including her. And I'm sure if they knew you were on, Dan, that Joe would have included you as well. After hearing Tom and Molly talk about how they don't know anyone who uses Square Cash, I thought I'd let you know my housemates and I use it to pay each other back for bills and other shared expenses. I don't know if it's a generational thing. We're all in our 20s, but none of us carries cash very often, and we very rarely write checks. So Square has been the way to go. It's really fast. Usually the money arrives the next day. Plus, being millennials, we always have our phones out anyway, right? It could be a generational thing. I don't write a whole lot of checks myself. I mean, it's basically the couple of people who just don't take money any other way, like my rent, for instance. But I do carry some cash, and I guess I use PayPal for the things that he's talking about. Dan, is it generational? You're kind of in between me and Joe here, generationally speaking.
I think it's probably generational as well as regional and lifestyle based. I remember when Venmo popped up here in the city a couple of years ago, a cashless talk was everywhere. But I don't know a single New Yorker that doesn't walk around with a nut. I mean, you just have to have bills in your pocket when you live in a city, or at least a city that's a pedestrian city. I have also convinced my landlord to take a digital check, so I'm completely paperless, which is wonderful. But
I would love that.
or almost, with the exception of that cash. But I think that it's also probably regional, you know, depending on where you live. If you live in a big college town, I bet, you know, University of Iowa, I bet this is pretty popular.
Yeah. Well, and I was at there was this brand new dessert shop that opened up not too far away, and they had Square at the checkout. So I was like, oh, well, let me see if they have Pay by Square. So I pulled out my old Square Wallet app, which has since been deprecated, but it still works. And they're like, that'll be whatever, you know, $10. And I said, do you see Tom? And they looked at it and they were shocked. They were like, it was like they called people over like, look, is this right? And then one of the guys like, yeah, that's right. You just press the accept button. And it was like, you know, the color television in the window at the department store. Like everybody had to gather around and look. So I think it is definitely generational because it just hasn't permeated everywhere. Right.
Yeah.
And S. Tim writes in. Or it may just be Tim. I don't know. I think there's another angle on the social media and political statement story. That's the one Molly and I were talking about yesterday. Often I don't bring up those types of topics in general settings in real life anymore either, but for a different reason. Thanks to Facebook and Twitter, in many cases, I already know where most of the crowd stands on an issue thanks to their other posts on hot topics. In many cases, maybe if it's clear that I'm in a crowd where I'll gain no traction and maybe not even have my ideas heard, I'm unlikely to bring it up. But at the same time, it's also helped me find reasonable, thoughtful people, some who share my opinion, some who don't, with whom I'd be willing to bring up things in a smaller group. But in general, I already can read the room in advance in many cases because enough of the people in the room have posted on enough topics in the past that I know what kind of reception it will get. I think Tim brings up a really insightful observation on that Pew study, which is the reduced willingness to discuss in public might be due to just a better knowledge of whether it's going to be a fruitful discussion or not.
You know, that's very interesting. There's a ton of nuance in this comment. And I think that that could be the case, or it could simply be. Part of me wonders if knowing how people are going to react will lessen your desire to interact with them. As we know, trolls will troll. And I think in person, people like to start arguments as well. But I do think that what this does is may set the tone. It may set the agenda without any type of the context going into it requires almost no analysis. So you kind of your emotions do the guiding as opposed to your head. Very interesting.
Yeah, it might be preventing fights. I mean, I think Molly and I were coming at it from the example of like, well, I'm just not going to bring stuff up in person now because I don't want those same fights that I get into on the internet. But I think what Tim's pointing out is sometimes it could be, I'm not going to bring something up right now because I know this is the crowd that will fight me, and I'll wait until I have a crowd of respectful people. And I'm glad he put that he will discuss things with people who don't agree with him sometimes, as long as he knows they're willing to be reasonable about it.
Yeah, although that's kind of what I was trying to articulate earlier, that this is the remark of somebody who is a thoughtful, very, you know, obviously this type of person is going to go into a room and approach a conversation like that, but people will troll in person too, and often we are just not as self-aware as Tim or as Tim is. He sounds like a very self-aware guy, but I think that maybe rooms of introverts will do this to each other and then just silently argue in their heads. But I I'm split, and I think that I can have a conversation for the rest of the afternoon on this topic.
Or maybe they they're doing what you're saying in person and then going to their anonymous Twitter accounts that nobody knows is them and then just flaming the other people.
Right.
Without them knowing it. I'm joking, but it probably actually happens, sadly enough. But I hope that Pew and other people do more research on this, because there are a few quirks in here. Like, well, maybe it'd be different if it wasn't the Snowden case that they were talking about. We don't really know how much of an effect that had. And this is just one example, too. You need multiple examples if you want to replicate your results. But really fascinating stuff. I'm glad they started the ball rolling there. And I'm glad to have you along for the show, Dan. DanPatterson.com, of course. You can follow him on Twitter, twitter.com/DanPatterson. There's two T's in Patterson. Anything going on? You've always got something interesting in the hopper. I know you can't always talk about the things you got in the hopper, too. So anything you can talk about?
Well, it's great to be here, and great to talk with you and Jenny as well. And yeah, there's always stuff going on. I just finished a story about the data behind gun trafficking on the so-called Iron Pipeline. We did this for Contently and Gawker and did a study of gun straw purchasing and the amount of death that this leads to in major cities on the East Coast. And the numbers are borrow from BuzzFeed, the numbers will shock you. They really will. It's at contently.org, not .com, contently.org. And down the pipeline, I'm doing some writing for the Washington Post and working on some longer form stuff for Gawker this fall. So always with the journalism. I wish it was more tech, like pure tech journalism, but it always involves data or some interesting tech angle.
No, that's that gun pipeline story, that's important stuff. So, you know, whether it's tech or not, I'm glad somebody's out
interesting.
There.
Interesting. I was shocked to learn some of this stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure. Follow Dan on Twitter if you want to find out some of these interesting stories that he's working on as they become available, twitter.com/DanPatterson. Also, thank you to our patrons. The Patreons now number 4,245, and I thank every single one of you for making the show possible. You're what allows us to adapt as we get challenged by different things that happen bandwidth-wise, etc. We have the flexibility to deal with that thanks to you. So we really, really seriously appreciate your support. Patreon.com/AceDetect. And if you don't want to do the patron thing, there's DailyTechNewsShow.com/donate for other ways to support the show, or you can just buy a t-shirt, or you can just tell people about the show. You're like, look, Tom, I ain't giving you my money. That's fine. I don't care. If you like the show, just tell people about it anywhere you can. We appreciate that just as much. Tomorrow will be a headlines-only show with a possible conversation along with that. Then Friday, as I mentioned, DTNS After Dark. Jonathan Strickland and guests from Dragon Con, recorded at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. It'll be live on Alpha Geek Radio, who they'll be broadcasting all over Dragon Con. And of course, we'll have it in the podcast as well. If you're going to be there, do come to the Grand Ballroom West at the Hilton. That's at 10 o'clock Eastern Atlanta time. Join us. Be in the crowd. And then Monday's Labor Day in the U.S., so that'll be another headline show. And then September 5th through the 12th is the week of amazing guests. We get more amazing guests all the time. I think Scott Johnson and Veronica Belmont are going to team up on the purported Apple announcement day, should that turn out to be true. So check that out. Don't forget, you can have a voice in what stories we cover at our website, dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com, to submit story ideas. Email feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com. Call us 512-59-DAILY. The show's live at mobile.alphageekradio.com Monday through Friday, and our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. I will be here with some headlines, possibly a Justin Robert Young or someone else alongside. Talk to you then.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.